Good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and you are watching or listening to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. And coming here from the Palatial Studios in Honolulu, I've got Norbert Davis from Totally Cool Tech up on top. Good morning, Norbert. How are you?
I'm doing great, Todd. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm you know, I'm alive. You know, I really, really am. I a couple of weeks ago, I told my wife my schedule. I said, I'm flying out for a week to Austin. I'm coming home Friday afternoon and I'm leaving Saturday night. And she says, why don't you just stay out? And I had already scheduled myself to, well, my, I finished up my college classes a couple of weeks ago and it coincided with, them having, the ceremony today. So in about 3 hours, I walk. So I get my sheepskin, I guess. So, you know, a little 25 years later than normal from when people get there. Degrees, but I'm done. So that's the important part.
I don't think that's too much the out of the norm anymore. I think a lot of people, you know, older people are going back and getting their degrees. My mom did it when I graduated high school. She went to college with me, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's cool.
She went and got her a degree, and now she's a teacher and all that.
Yeah, when I was in the Navy, I really didn't need one, and then I was getting ready to retire and was worried about jobs and didn't know if this business was going to take off or not, and so I started, but yeah, at 4 years, I finished in 4 years, which wasn't too bad. So, hey, Dr. Bill's on the bottom. Good morning, Dr. Bill. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Tired, but like we were talking about earlier, we've had some interesting times lately, but, you know, it's going well here.
Well, that's good. Well, of course, both Norbert and Dr. Bill are part of the Tech Podcast Network over at techpodcast.com. And definitely it's, you know, you've changed up a couple of things, but you are at drbill.tv. Is that where you're at now?
Yeah, I've got basically two main websites, drbill.cc, which stands for computer curmudgeon, of course.
Right.
that is the main site where the blog is. And then drbill.tv is the video feed. And it's pretty much just the whole screen is the video. And I've got some icons and things around the bottom, but between the two sites, I call the program drbill.tv as a shorthand, or Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon is the long name, but I had a hiatus there of a couple of years, as you know,
right.
And been building the audience back up now. We're recently I was noticing we had about 27,000 or so that have joined us, so
nice.
The more the merrier.
Very good. So, Norbert, you're still at Totally Cool Tech, right? TotallyCoolTech.com, right?
Definitely, yes. And starting to do some video, too, so be looking for more of that.
Well, it looks like you've got it dialed in this morning. I see you're representing the Marine Corps as well this morning with a T-shirt, so
yep.
Semper Fi.
Thank you. Hoorah.
There you go.
So, well, I tell you, you know, I was, as I was, you know, kind of getting stuff ready here. Actually, I had the studio kind of tore down. As when I travel, I make this room a little bit more usable so that people don't trip over stuff when I'm gone. And I was hooking all this stuff up, and I was like, my God, this is just ridiculous, the amount of gear. But you know, it's really kind of cool. Where I was telling Dr. Bill about some stuff I saw recently, and you know, doing video these days is becoming easier. The folks at Blackmagic have put together a new $1,000 1x8 switcher. It's a device that'll fit in a 19-inch rack, but it's only a couple inches deep, so you could really almost mount it anywhere. And this pretty amazing device. You can run 8 cameras into it and plug the HDMI out from the camera, or you can use the SD input or SDI input. So they've got both. You can't do like an SD camera, so it does have to be a camera that can do HDMI. But you know, that does all the heavy loading of doing the switching, and then it will actually also, it's got functions to record the video. So it's got an MP4 recorder, and it runs through a, basically the switch on it is similar to like the TriCaster, except it's on the screen, but you can use a program like Wirecast or VidBlaster to, you know, do all your overlays and all the other stuff. And so what I, you know, what I spent all this money for here, now you can essentially do for about $2,000 versus, you know, the high price of a TriCaster or similar equipment. So, I think it's pretty cool. Someone's saying that your audio is low, Dr. Bill. I didn't think so. I thought we were good. I can turn you up a little bit back here on the audio.
All righty. I start to say there's not a lot I can do on this end. I might could adjust it, but I'll let you try it first because.
Yeah, you're not bad.
The way it is. Okay.
You're not bad. So, you know, but technology is getting smaller and smaller, you know, and it won't be too long and the price of it goes down. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to look into that. I'd like to see what I could do with it.
Is someone got an air? I'm hearing a buzzing in the background. Sounds like someone's shaving.
I'm trying to take care of that right now. There. Hopefully that'll do it.
Funny. Hey,
I got a fan. All of a sudden, it's the CPU cooling fan. It cools the unit, but it, all of a sudden it's just gotten noisy. So I got to go take care of that.
So you got one that's gotten a bunch of lint in them, like they do from time to time, and it's just, I know what it's doing.
Yeah, it's just vibrating. It's a pain.
It's funny. Hey, let's talk a little bit new news out, and this just came out this morning. Time Warner saying once again that they're considering usage-based internet billing. So, you know, considering Comcast is on billing, you know, Time Warner had taken quite a bit of heat the last time they talked about this, but once again, they are raising the flag on this. What do you guys, you think this is inevitable? You think we're not going to have much choice? This is going to happen ultimately?
I think there needs to be more competition generally. A lot of people have got either Time Warner or DSL now. I had Time Warner, and the service was so terrible that I ended up going to the phone company and going with DSL, but they've got a new 20-gig download and off roughly 1 gig up. And with their new fiber optic, as soon as they give it out my way, which I'm a little bit out of town, out in the country, but they're going to have 30 meg symmetrical. And I will be on top of that when it comes out. But right now I'm pretty happy with DSL. And unlimited, no caps. Runs about $50 or thereabouts. So, you know, pretty good.
You know, I'm out here on the end of the line as far as DSL goes. Seems like that's how it always works out. I'm the farthest away from the switch. So I can only get about maybe 3 meg down and a meg up on DSL. Then I've got my... Time Warner is our only choice here. We don't have any other cable provider. So
see, that's the way it is so many places. That's why we really need some more competition. I had great hopes for Google with their ubiquitous Wi-Fi initiative a few years ago they were talking about. I'd love to see somebody pick that up and run with it.
Yeah, out here in Elk Grove, which is just south of Sacramento, we actually have a couple of options. You know, you have obviously, you know, your Dish network and your DirecTV, and the local phone company with DSL, but we also have Comcast with their Xfinity now. But we also have a company called Sure West. And for about 8-9 years now, I've been on fiber optics. So I had this for a long time and actually was able to get an IP number. So I've got a set IP number that I pay for, static IP. And I'm getting 20 meg down and about 15 meg up. So my speeds are awesome, you know, and I've been on this for, like I said, 8 years. Yeah. When I saw them digging in the area, you know, I was hot on it and I was telling my wife, we're going to get fiber optic. We're going to get this really fast internet. You think that the DSL is good. Wait till you see this. And it's been awesome. You know, I haven't gone back to anybody else because nobody can touch it. And they even have 50 megabit business class service available if you want it.
You know, and they doubled the speeds here in Hawaii earlier this year, and we went to 10 megs down and still less than a meg up. So that's the best you can get here unless you go out and buy commercial services and have them dig a line in and it's just, you know, I've got a project going here in Hawaii right now where, I've kind of let the cat out of the bag already. I'm talking about doing something similar to what Leo's doing, but it make it Hawaii entertainment, food, culture, that type of stuff. And I'm working on getting talent lined up. And so it'll be an actually local kind network of content. I won't be on it. It'll just be local talent. But you know, we're
that actually sounds pretty good. We'd be able to get that onto the local cable companies as well.
Right now is not the plan. If they want to take it, they can. But we're going to be web based and start out with the goal of having about 20 hours of programming a week. But my biggest challenge thus far is we're looking for a studio location, and ultimately we want it to be in a hotel. We want it to be so that you can see Waikiki Beach in the background and, you know, have the full Hawaiian vibe. But the infrastructure in the hotels and contracts are so forth that I'm having trouble getting around, because the hotel says, well, you have to use our internet provider. And I'm like, no, I don't need hotel class speed. I need commercial class high speed internet.
Exactly.
This is not something. And so our biggest challenge, believe it or not, has been the hotel has been buying off an idea, but having the ability to get the right kind of bandwidth in, which is kind of crazy. But that is one of the small stumbling blocks to get this thing off the ground.
Can't use a virtual studio and a green screen and a webcam based wherever to get the scene you want for the background?
No, because we plan on doing like in studio stuff too. We plan on doing like, have you ever seen any Japanese game shows? Have you ever seen any of that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
So we plan on doing some of that type of activities. So, you know, that kind of cool. You know, you can give away rooms and hotel rooms and airfare and, you know, you got this great destination and then you have the people that win come to the show. And so, you know, just do on the beach stuff where, you know, the guys walking on the beach, talking with people about, you know, what's going on with the surf or, you know, what they've been doing on their vacation, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. So it's just it's a big project. And, I'm actually just going to manage it. I'll be hiring people to run it. And, going to be a separate new company, but we'll be I'm excited about it, but it's just going to take just got to work through these details. But you know, every time it's here in Hawaii, the big issue is getting the access to the enough speed to make it work. And
Well, have you heard about Knoxville, Tennessee? They now have 1 gigabit symmetrical,
right,
available for like, it's like $70 a month or some ridiculous price. Wow. And the whole approach that the city is taking is what kinds of new business paradigms can you come up with if you've got this kind of bandwidth to work with? And I think it's going to revolutionize a lot of what we do with video and with, I guess you'd call it independent television, IPTV. It's going to be some neat stuff coming out of that, but I'd love to see it here. And I think that's what we need, like you say, is just more bandwidth where we can do more with it.
Who's providing that, Dr. Bill? Is that a city mandated or city sponsored? Or
it's city sponsored. I don't know who the company is. I want to say it might even be Comcast, but I'm not 100% sure of that. But the city is sponsoring it only insofar as helping build the infrastructure out. They aren't getting the revenue. But they're encouraging, they're basically wanting Knoxville to be known as the most connected city.
There you go.
And with that alone is going to be a big draw for them in terms of bringing in businesses and developing new businesses and that kind of thing. It's a great idea. It's awesome.
Oh, definitely.
I was trying to find the article, but there was an article either yesterday or the day before that was talking about, you know, so here we got talking about implementing usage-based internet billing. You've got some of Comcast of the world are already doing it. Now we're going to have, they've already reversed, you know, now we've got limits on our mobile usage. And they have come out with a report that in the last 6 months, the amount of usage that each person is using on their mobile device has doubled. Just in 6 months, if you're using, you know, the average person was using a meg or gig of data a month, now they're using 2 gigs. In just 6 months, that's doubled. So, you know, now we're going to be, at some point, we're going to be stifled. Innovation is going to be stifled, I believe, because of bandwidth caps. And, you know, they're talking about this new great service with DOCSIS 3. They found new ways to go Cablevision has found a way to get the cable speed to 30, what did they demonstrate? They demonstrated 30 gigs symmetrical. And so that tells me that it won't be long before the cable companies will have overcome their, you know, they'll be able to compete with fiber in a big way. And not that they're going to give me 30 gigs to this house. I'd be happy for, you know, a gig. the simple fact that they know people are going to be using more bandwidth. Cox is introducing, or Comcast is introducing through some markets, a tripling of upload speed because they know that there's heavy competition coming in some markets. So where you may have had a meg before, they're starting to open up more channels, and now you're going to have a 3 meg upload pipe. To me, you know, that sounds good from that retrospect, but I just, you know, I guess if you're in an area where there's no competition there's no incentive for them to do that.
It's like my Droid phone here. I've got unlimited internet access on it, and I'm paying, I don't know, it's a premium. It's like $30 extra a month for unlimited. But I don't know if I'm really using it or not, but I just like the fact that I don't have that cap. I'm just kind of, I don't know. It's just me. But now just Verizon is no talking worries, about making unlimited limited.
Right.
They still call it unlimited, but they're talking about limiting it. And that just chafes me because if I want to watch a whole movie on my phone, which I probably would never do that, as small a screen as it is, but if I happen to be sitting in a parking lot waiting on my wife to get out of the grocery store and wanted to watch a show, fine, I should be able to do it without having to worry about, oh, what's that going to do to my bandwidth? And that's, like you say, it stifles creativity. It stifles potential future software that we haven't even thought of yet, that somebody's going to come up with that'll be the next big thing.
I don't think it would stifle innovation. It's just going to stifle billing and people's willingness to use it, which I guess would stifle some innovations. But I can understand that you know, maybe we have to have a tier system. You know, I mean, I don't use a lot of, I don't do a lot of texting. My wife, of course, does. And I have an unlimited system for that on Verizon. But I wouldn't mind a tiered system. But I think that the infrastructure that we have right now is not going to be able to hold much more advances in bandwidth traffic until we basically redo it. I mean, you're looking at a lot of the copper that's out there, and they're doing better jobs at having higher bandwidths across copper, but you're going to have to go to the fiber optics and redo what's down there underneath the streets or above, you know, on the power poles. You know, they just don't have enough infrastructure right now, I think, is the main limit.
Well, I think, you know, just like anything else, you get better technology if you really want it. And it's through investment in your equipment. And that's, you know, just like they demonstrated here, that they're able now to show fiber speeds on a traditional cable line with minimal amount of hardware upgrade. But, you know, I think the hardwired infrastructure is definitely going to have to continue to grow. It's something we all want. We need it. It's going to drive the economy. And if it doesn't keep up, it's going to be an issue. You know, you look at what we're doing here. And, you know, I live in a major metropolitan area. I live in a city that, basically what would be considered a normal size of a typical county. And we've got, a million people here in this metropolis. Now, it's not an island, but it's typically not much bigger than a regular county would be in the, or maybe like Orange County or something like that from a population density. So from my perspective is, you know, I'm here, I'm living in a major metropolitan area and I have so few choices and relatively, now again, I guess for the average person, maybe they're completely happy. And I am looking at it from a commercial perspective. And when they can't keep up on a commercial perspective, there's something really, really wrong. But we'll see what Time Warner does on this. They got so much pushback last time that, I don't know if it's going to work this time. It scares me because if they go into a usage-based internet billing, I'm already in a business account. I'm already paying a huge amount of money. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But time will tell. And I think it's just going to get more ugly as time going on. Let's talk just a little bit about the what happened up in Vancouver after the Bruins beat the. And I'm not a sports guy. I was with had a buddy with me last week that was a huge hockey fan, and of course every night that they were playing, he was inaccessible. But they're saying now that they are using Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, and a variety of other social media websites to take faces and match them to the idiots that were doing what they were doing, and going to use that to hunt those folks to prosecute them.
I think that's great. You know, if you're in public and you do something stupid, and there's a camera there, and it's, you know, put out there that it's there. I think that's just a tool that the police have a right to use and should use, because they can go back and get financial, you know, compensation for, you know, any damages and so forth that they caused to public, you know, infrastructure, or, you know, even private businesses or whatever that got damaged. It's perfectly fine. I think this is a great thing, and maybe this will help deter things like this happening.
You look at
a riot anymore and get away with it.
You got people taking videos. So you got one, at least I'm looking here, you got 1, 2, 3 very discernible faces, it may be 4. And this is just one snapshot from a live video that was being taken of these guys rolling this specific car over. And, you know, at least some people were pulling up their hoodies and had sunglasses on and so forth as they were rioting and, you know, they were planning to, as they were robbing businesses. But it will be curious to see how many people they're able to prosecute just because of the use of social media.
I think the thing is, I mean, you know, it's, to me, it's crazy to riot over sports. I'm not a sports guy like you. I just don't get that into it. However, and it's bad behavior, don't get me wrong, but I do see a concern in terms of general overall human rights privacy if this continues to the point that anybody with their camera on their phone or anywhere you go, any video that's going to be streamed up to YouTube or whatever, can then be turned around and used for purposes other than maybe it was originally intended for. I really would be concerned if it was the police themselves that were constantly videoing everything all the time, everywhere in every city. I mean, at that point, it's almost, and they do that in London. I mean, that's not unheard of. But I just, that's a lot of power in a few people's hands from my perspective. So I get a little antsy about that. Maybe it's the libertarian bent in me, but it is an interesting social phenomenon that we just don't have the kind of privacy. We can't expect that privacy anymore.
But when you're out in public, Dr. Bill, what kind of privacy do you really have? You're in public.
And that's exactly the way the laws are, is even if you're whoever you are, if you're out in public, all bets are off. Now, if you come into my home and you start videoing, that's a whole nother animal. And I understand that.
And I don't agree with the police, say, confiscating or using someone else's personal video that got taken on a cell phone camera, whatever it is. But if they're using Twitter and Facebook to match faces with video that they took from public cameras, that I think is fine. I would consider that camera to be a virtual cop, you know, with a virtual set of eyes, mm-hmm. and he can just remember everything. Not exactly 100% happy with it, but I see where it can be used for good. You know, I don't like them taking pictures of me, you know, in my house, but, you know.
Yeah,
I put stuff on video, so I kind of put myself out there, you know, as we all are doing right now.
Right. Well, you couldn't argue entrapment. You couldn't argue I went out there to capture you doing something one way or the other. It just happened to be that I had a camera. I, you know, picked it up and was videoing with it, and you were doing something stupid. I caught you, you know, perfectly reasonable in that sense. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't think that using someone else's camera going into, you know, Joe Blow, who was out there just recording it, you know, personally, and taking that, that video or that film or whatever it is to find these people and prosecute them with. Now, if it's a news agency filming, that's different. I think that's because they're going to put it out to the public. That becomes, to me, public works in a way. Or the police's monitor cameras or whatever they have, a city safety cameras, whatever they want to call them. It's perfectly fine to use those.
You know, I think what we're seeing, too, is that you look at in the UK, if you go into Britain and you go into downtown areas, the heavy commercial districts in that area or around the pub, you know, there's districts of pubs and so forth. You know, there's not very much you can get away with because they have a huge, huge, you think that we're under surveillance. The British are used to it in a big way. And it helps them, you know, prosecute people. And again, this is public places, but you look at where a lot of convictions are coming from criminals these days is that, in matter of fact, I was asked about 3 weeks ago by my local police department to look at video from my cameras that are facing the street to basically give them about a 6-hour run of video that I had shot from the street because they had an issue down the street and they were trying to identify a specific vehicle possibly being on my street. And from what I understand is that information helped them solve basically what was a ring of people that were hitting residents here in robberies. So I think that, you know, most of these folks that are out doing criminal activities, they really got to think twice about where they're being, you know, how they're being captured in their movements. At the same point, I do understand what Dr. Bill's saying about our, you know, certain point, our liberties being invaded. And I think at this point we can all agree that, you know, that Uncle Sam and everyone else has got pretty deep insight on what we probably are doing on a daily basis. If they want to be looking at what we're doing. But
we also got to look at, you know, how much of that are we putting out there ourselves? I mean, look at all the things on YouTube.
Yep.
Look at all the Twitter things.
Yep.
We're our own worst enemy when it comes to our own security. You know, we put everything out there, and then when something comes back to bite us, then we start, you know, crying. And we really need to educate ourselves and really think about what we do. You know, it's like, if you want to become a politician, everything you do from that point on is in the public.
You have
no right to privacy.
Never.
Well, exactly. I got into a discussion yesterday at work. A friend of mine there was talking about how he would never use Google again because they knew everything about him and his family and they were gathering all this data. And I'm like, you know, Phil, here's the thing. I doubt very seriously they know it's you by name, that they're targeting you. They know maybe your general socioeconomic level. They know what you're surfing. They're gathering that and doing data mining. Yes, and that is troubling, don't get me wrong, but I just don't see that they're holding a dossier on you individually. but still, that's the world we're living in now. We've got to be more aware that everything we do, every site we go to is being registered in a database somewhere.
That's true.
It's, you know, and I look at how we pull data together, find out, you know, for just billing for advertisers. We break people down into countries and we don't go into individual statistics on each individual viewer or listener, of course. You know, that would be, you know, first of all, it's not needed. But, you know, we have a pretty good idea where people are watching and listening to certain programming. And I'm sure, and there's been a lot of companies that are doing a lot more stuff, a lot deeper than that. Let's talk, you know, let me try to switch gears here a little bit and tie this into an article that was over on TechCrunch about 20 hours ago. And it's about PR people. I'm sure, you know, you guys having creating media, doing blogs, you're getting probably dozens of emails a day from PR people pitching you articles. And this one specifically, that was they were talking about the folks over at Facebook, and they ran the story on their Facebook project called Project Spartan. And it was basically about some apps that they're building for Apple and how they're trying to recontrol their ecosystem. But the PR people began emailing journalists immediately after they wrote this, trying to pitch them stories countering this guy's articles. And what Facebook PR failed to realize is that that they were emailing people that were really more loyal to their own kind than to some PR flack. And people was alerting TechCrunch writer to this this PR spin. And here's an interesting quote. He says, "You guys should remember that there's not much new in tonight's TechCrunch story," began one message. "You should," and these were the words that were put out by the PR person. So in other words, you guys should, and this is, you know, it was followed up with a message. He goes on to say three words that should never come out of a PR person's mouth ever. So what I get all the time now is, and it's just driving me insane. And then the email starts like this: "Hey Todd, love your site, following what you're doing. You're doing great things. Hey, I've got an article on a specific product, service, event, widget. Would love to submit to you. It's original writing, and we've got some writers, and we'd like to give you this article." Well, I played along a few times and gotten the articles from these people and just looked at them. I've never posted them. And, you know, what they're doing now, PR agencies are preying on small bloggers who are in need of good content, and they're essentially buying them off with a, and this is, it's worse than what it's even what has been before. So now they want to buy them off with a written article that would go up on your blog. Now, there's just no way I'm going to do that. There's, you know, never in this lifetime am I going to get an article submitted by a PR hack that I would ever put up on my website. And I basically have responded back, if you want us to review the product, you send us the product. I'll give it to one of our writers. They will review it, use it in a real world situation, and write an objective review. Same thing on using the service. And it's amazing how quickly, oh, we have limited number of review units, but yet they're willing to, you know, so much easier to try to give me an article. So do you think at this point we're getting to a time where there has to be some sort of disclaimer put on websites and put into articles saying this is original, or this was submitted by, or, you know, I know we do disclaimers on reviews already. Whenever we get a review, I said this product was provided by such and such company as a review unit. What do you guys think on disclaimers on, you know, written articles?
I think if the person is not already associated with that blogger site or podcast, whatever it is, and something is just put out there, posted, it does need to have something on it that says this is not a normal contributor to this site or whatever, you know. So at least you know it's different than what you would typically get from that site.
Dr. Yeah, Billy. You're basically advertising for the company, because they've hired this person to put out a favorable article, obviously, and they're trying to get you to run it for free, in effect. So now you're advertising for them without getting any revenue out of that. And monetizing websites is one of the hardest things I've found to really get your arms around and do it well. And that's one reason I'm so pleased with Tech Podcasts and Blueberry and everything that the guys at Raw Voice there are doing for us as podcasters, because I'm just one guy out here in the middle of nowhere at High Point, North Carolina. You know, I don't have access to everything that you guys do. And so by joining together, it helps us. But in the same way, because you're a little guy out here, as Todd was saying, they take advantage of you. They try to say, hey, we've got this article, you can post it, get content on your site. And I'm getting more and more aware of the fact that even if you look at search engine optimization for your own site, Google is looking for content that is fresh, is original, is not just a repost of an article from somewhere else. And they're looking at that verbiage, and they're determining whether or not your site is valid and useful depending on what you have posted. So in a way, it's putting even more pressure on us to come up with truly original, unique content. And to be honest, that's actually a valid thing. We should be not just recycling information, but putting our own slant on it. That's why people watch us. That's why people listen to us. And so it keeps us honest, in effect.
I definitely agree. You know, it's sometimes hard to come up with, you know, totally fresh and innovative articles. Difficult, but if you're going to repurpose something, you need to at least put your opinion onto it or give it a different angle in presenting it. So, you know, I've had the same, Todd, where I've gotten a couple of solicitations to put an article on there or things like that, and I've turned them down. You know, I've done some review units of things, but I do say that. As a matter of fact, I just got in a new device. It's a dry case. I don't know if you've heard of these, Todd or Bill, where you put your iPod in there, and it's a clear case, and it's waterproof, and it vacuums down, and you can use your iPod in the water, your iPad, your Kindle, whatever, and use it at the beach or the pool. And I've done a review on this, and it's actually pretty cool. So, but you know, in my review and all that, it is put out there that this is a review unit. I was provided these, and you know, I'm not getting paid to do this, but I was given this. I didn't purchase it myself. Unless I did purchase it myself, then I will say that as well.
One thing that we're seeing too is that the, for a better word, you know, I used to get emails all the time saying, hey, can we buy a link on your website? And my response was, I always said, yeah, sure. You can buy a link on my website. It'll be $10,000 a week. And and that's basically what I put any people like for a link. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what the, you know, well, what is your traffic? And you know, I would say, and I said, well, that's ridiculous. And well, what you're asking me to do is ridiculous. And, you know, to sell my soul, it's $10,000 a week. You know, for a link on my website. And
everybody has a price.
Yeah. Usually they go away, you know, and, you know, and so I feel that this new tactic that they're taking of buying or trying to buy you off with a submission of an article is a new form of link baiting. And it's actually a much better one because it's embedded in the quote unquote content of the website. So
what makes it appealing is that the blogger doesn't have to do the work.
Right.
They don't have to review it. They just, you know, post it. Poof. They're done. Hey, they got content on their site. Maybe some more traffic. That's very appealing.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah. And they're actually also appealing to ego because I'm contacting you because of your awesome website, you know,
exactly.
And you can fall into that whole trap.
You sure can. So, and then, you know, that's something I have to, you know, when we have new writers come on board, I caution them. I said, okay, you're going to start getting solicitations for gear. And I said, you know, I want you to be very careful. You know, if you end up writing an article about a piece of gear that I know is a piece of crap and you give it a positive review, then we're going to have some internal communication because I want everything to be objective and you know, and I think for the most part, people that ask you to review gear, you're going to get something that's decent because they know that they're not going to risk sending you their piece of junk gear to get a positive review. I think that at least that part, they're smart enough to know better. But believe me, I've seen some weird stuff come across my desk.
Hey, version 1.0 or less.
Yeah, you know, it's, and I'll give the courtesy of them. I'll send an email back and say, listen, this is what I'm finding. I say, can I get some response from the company? Can you tell me what you're going to do to fix this? And I'll try to give them the benefit of the doubt that way. But if they don't respond, then it's, you know, it's publish time. So we'll see. Hey, let's talk about, you guys are obviously calling in on Skype today. And Microsoft has gotten approval to buy Skype. And they won U.S. antitrust. Basically, they've said that there's no antitrust issues. And the FTC says that Microsoft may go forth with their $8.5 billion acquisition of Skype. What's your thoughts on the approval for them to move forward?
I don't have a problem with it as long as it doesn't become dependent on the Microsoft operating system you know. I don't mind it being, I don't want it to be totally integrated with it. I don't mind that they, you know, optimize Windows and Skype to work well together, but I think it should be able to work, obviously on any platform, but I don't want it integrated into my operating system.
I would imagine it would be preloaded. I can't imagine it not being. Dr. Bill, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about it, I'll admit, mainly because I'm an open source kind of guy. I've worked with Linux. I'm a little leery of Microsoft, though they do have good technology. And I think Microsoft's real claim to fame, even from the beginning, is that they have bought some good ideas and some good companies.
Yeah.
And they put their name on it. Left to themselves, they come up with Microsoft Bob, but anyway, I just think that as long as they don't screw it up, if they'll leave Skype alone, it's a great service. There are alternatives out there, including some open source tools, aren't as ubiquitous as Skype is, but the tools are there if we have to leave them. But to be honest, this thing works really well. And there's some third-party software. There's one that I have called Super 1010 that is very inexpensive, that allows you to have multiple Skype sessions that you can then record and do a show very similar to what we're doing here, extremely inexpensively using Skype. And I'd hate to lose that capability if they started fooling around with it and cutting out those third-party tools like that.
I would agree.
Which Microsoft
I would
has
agree.
Done.
I'd hate to see them limit the ability of other vendors to do anything with Skype that maybe, you know, Skype wasn't doing on their own. I mean, Microsoft is almost a necessary evil. They do have a lot of resources and people and talent that they can take something and expand on it. But I would, like Dr. Bill was saying, I'd hate for them to go ahead and remove some functionalities and capabilities that we have right now, you know, with third-party software and things.
You know what you're going to have to do, Norbert? You're going to have to smack that fan.
Oh, I know. It's I got to get another one on order here.
It always sounds like feedback. I keep hearing this.
It's I think what's going on is the I think there's a bearing inside that thing. Is it's got it's, you know, until
it's about to go.
It's about to go, and the smoke is sparked to roll out of the back of it. So
I know. I'm about to let out the magic
excitement.
Smoke. I do apologize.
That's funny. Hey, have you guys done anything with Bitcoin at all? Have you guys bought any Bitcoins?
No, I have not.
You know, there was a big heist. $500,000 worth of Bitcoins were basically hijacked earlier in the week, and there's new malware out right now that are targeting Bitcoin traders or those that are actually have Bitcoins. And I think Bitcoin's under the overlook of the Senate and folks right now because they've got had some crazy stuff being bought with Bitcoin. There went. It quit. What'd you do? Did you put a pencil in it and stop the fan?
You know what? I'm hitting the mute when I'm not talking, so I'm going to do that.
There you go.
That works. Man,
high tech.
So the anyway, there's new malware out that looks for this DAT file that is stored on your computer that goes after the malware. Like if you get this DAT file, if you're able to capture it and steal it, you then are basically have the possession of the keys for those Bitcoins. I'm not fully familiar with how it works completely, but that now people are sweating that they're under attack from some new malware to basically rob them of their currency. So, any thoughts on Bitcoin at all, or do you think the future of Bitcoin will work, or good old greenback's going to continue to be the currency to use?
Well, I don't know a lot about Bitcoin specifically. I have read a little bit here and there about it, and I definitely haven't looked into it. But in a similar vein, there's a lot of talk about being able to store money on your phone and then scan as you go through a kiosk or something like that through your phone. And to me, it's almost like the whole business with a regular credit card where somebody can scan your credit card in the back when they go to, when you pay in a restaurant, and now they've got your credit card information and so forth. It seems to me that opens up a whole area of people stealing your information, identity theft, tapping into your accounts because of the phone is broadcasting. I mean, you know, well, there's going to be ways to tap into that through malware of various kinds.
They've been using payment system, NFS, I think it's called Nearfield Systems, in Japan for 10 years. And believe it or not, I've been thoroughly disgusted that they haven't caught up here in the United States in all these years, because you can basically take your phone in Japan and put it up against a vending machine, and you have to put a pin in. There's a little transaction you have to do, but you'll get a soda, you buy groceries, buy a lot of stuff just right on your mobile device. And to this point, it's pretty secure. They haven't had very many issues with it.
Well, that's good. If they've got that kind of experience with it, you know, and we can leverage that, maybe it won't be as bad as I'm thinking, but it seems like all we see in the news these days are people that are tapping into all kinds of accounts. Like we were discussing before the program started about Bitware being hacked, 18,000 accounts tapped into, Sony, the CIA of all people. I mean, they all know what's, what's going on, and they got hacked.
You know, I've got an article about those guys, and do you, can you, you know, let's think about this. Okay, we attacked, no, they attacked Sony, they attacked all these different groups, and then they're going to go ahead and attack the CIA's government website. You know, let's stir the kettle a little bit here, and you know, these guys are just asking for trouble. They really, really are.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
They put out a manifesto a couple of days. I think the group is called Lusek. I don't know how they're supposed to pronounce them. Lusek. Someone's going to correct me here at some point on what
this French.
But they put out this manifesto that I read it. And I was like, wow, you know, these guys are hardcore. And we'll see. We'll see where this goes with them. But I think they better be good at covering their tracks. If they don't, they've made a lot of enemies here recently. Any thoughts, Norbert?
When you go up against the boys in Virginia, you're really going to get in trouble. Those guys don't like playing around, and they'll find you one way or another. They've got infinitesimal resources, and they will find you sooner or later. They will find you, and they will put you out of business. These guys are crazy for going after the CIA. I mean, it's bad enough that they're going after other, you know, private companies and so forth. But now they've gone after government, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. But as far as this Bitcoin stuff goes, I guess it's, you know, any way for people to make a buck, that's for sure.
Well, I only use PayPal, and I have a totally separate account from any of my other banking accounts. And I only keep enough money in there to cover any kind of bills that I know I'm going to have with it or any kind of future purchases. I just put very little in there, and it's just totally separate from any other account. So if they get that, oh, well, they're going to get maybe $100 at a time, you know, and that's it. So I protect myself that way. I don't have it tied to my regular account.
Now, that's smart, and that's what people should do. But, you know, you're in the very tiny minority that do that.
Yep. And I charge mine with a credit card, so I don't let them keep the credit card information on file, but I do. That's how I charge my PayPal account.
I have a banking card. It's a debit card, and I go into that bank and I transfer money from one account to the other, and that's the only way you're going to get money in or out of it. So, unless of course, you know, Todd and Tech Podcast Casts are going to be paying me, so but it's tied to my PayPal account. So, you know, I can get paid through there, but the amount that I actually keep in there is very little at any time. If it gets too large, I pull some of it out.
There is let's move on here to a new topic. Senate committee votes to make illegal streaming of movies, TV, a felony. Moving closer to a possible loot. And this was over at HollywoodReporters.com. Actually, let me bring the article up on the website here. Give them credit where credit is due. Again, at HollywoodReporter.com. They say moving closer to a possible loophole in the laws against the pirating of movies, TV shows, and other intellectual property, U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee on Thursday approved making illegal streaming of video over the internet a felony. And the Commercial Felony Streaming Act, Senate Bill 978, introduced by Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota, and John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, reconciles the disparity between the current law on streaming of content and peer-to-peer downloading. The legislation is approved by the administration and, of course, by all of the majors. And this specifically makes it illegal to stream motion pictures and television programming. And so I this doesn't come as a surprise, and but it's a felony. This is what's totally amazing. The penalties increase up to 5 years in prison when it involves 10 or more instances of streaming over a 180-day period. The retail value of stream video must not must exceed $2,500, or the license of material must be worth more than $5,000. Now, here's the thing that makes me a little bit nervous. If I was to take and load up a segment of a television show, let's say I wanted to talk about 60 seconds of something that happened at CNN or Fox, or if I wanted to take some sort of a piece and use that in a fair use capability, I'd be very, very worried about doing that. And it's even, you know, some folks are taking C-SPAN information and they're using that in their reporting and replaying that back. I don't know. What do you guys think about this, the implications here? And you know, a lot of people are weighing in on this.
That's where I have a concern. When I saw that, I kind of immediately went to what are the implications to those of us who are streaming our own video. Now, obviously the content is our own content, and you would say, well, there's no concern, but you've hit on exactly what's concerning me. And that is, what about if I want to review the new Green Lantern movie and I get just a little bit of video to splash up there? Am I now in violation? And what are the cutoffs? And YouTube is already sending out, you know, little warnings saying, hey, you may have copyrighted content in your program. And I've just pretty much cut out using any video that I didn't personally produce for that very reason. And it is restricting, because it's nice to throw up, you know, on the screen behind you something you're talking about, even if it's just nothing but a trailer. There needs to be some kind of understanding there of what's fair use.
Here's an interesting, and Norbert, I'll let you comment in a second. They say, even supporters of this bill who insisted that we were wrong about what the bill allowed eventually conceded that our argument was accurate and that the bill could be used to put people in jail for embedding a YouTube video or doing a lip sync video. So if I load someone's YouTube video and plays it on the show, which I do all the time, I could be charged with a felony.
I think that even some of the people who are, you know, the senators and representatives and all that are going to be approving this legislation, I don't even think they understand it. I mean, and those of us who, you know, produce content and are the ones that are fearful of this legislation, we don't even fully understand it. So I don't think there's enough explanation, like Dr. Bill is saying, you know, can I put up a trailer for, you know, it's a few seconds and talk about it without being in trouble. These bits of legislation are so confusing in the way they're written, and they're restrictive to the nth degree that you don't even want to get in this business, you know, and do anything like that just for the fear of being, you know, put in jail or fined.
Yeah, I let's see if I can get the right screen up there. I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go, to be honest with you. And it makes me a little nervous. And if someone doesn't like you and you've said something negatively about their material and you've used a clip of it in your content, you know, that's where the danger is. You know, if I see someone's content and I think the guy is completely off the chart, and I use a section or I segment the commentary around the person's content to make my case, well, I am allowed to have an opinion and say what I feel about something relatively safe from prosecution, or from, you know, you're never really completely safe from lawsuit. But as long as I don't slander someone and I give my opinion on a piece, you know, I'm relatively safe. But if I use any part of, it's like you can put anything up now and people, if people use it, you can, you know, get them charged with a felony. It scares me.
Yeah.
I think that fair use takes precedence over this. And as long as you're not streaming the whole thing, the whole entirety of the piece, I think you're fine. I mean, this kind of comes back around to the article you had this week in your thing where that UK student is going to be extradited or is facing extradition to the U.S. just for providing link to a set of content that is copyrighted, and those servers may not even be in the United States, and the United States is trying to sue this guy. It's almost ridiculous into that, you know, extent. You know, did this guy, is he streaming the content? No, he's providing a link to it. I don't think should be prosecuted for that, but I don't know. It's getting a little bit confusing on what you can and cannot put up on the internet.
Yeah.
And that's essentially it. It's confusing. And there needs to be some clarification. And I don't know where we're going to get it. I mean, I can envision it'd be great if I had the ability for somebody to request use of my content, maybe a particular episode or something. If I could just they could ask me electronically, I could approve it electronically on the website, and then they have a license, a small license to use that content. I don't know that we'll ever see something like that, but I think it may get to that point at some point.
Well, YouTube has implemented the ability for you to assign Creative Commons licenses to your videos. So at least from that standpoint, you can set the usage requirements or usage allowable within YouTube. Now, they just started doing that. Used to be you'd have to cut and paste your license type in. And I ran into a situation last year where, well, I really only copyright one piece of video content a year, and that's my podcast awards ceremony. That I retain copyright on. Everything else people can use as they please in the you know, cutting it up and taking pieces of it for their own shows if they want. But, you know, I think that's what we're all going to have to do. But the average Joe, I don't know if he knows about Creative Commons. So hopefully maybe that would be the way we'll mitigate some of this over time. But we'll see. But, you know, I'm not always pulling stuff from YouTube. I'm pulling stuff from all over the place.
Yeah.
Hey, last article here, and I'm going to wrap the show up at just about an hour. Is talking about AOL. There was an article over at the fastertimes.com website, and let me actually bring this up. And the title of the article is AOL Hell, an AOL content slave speaks out, and it talks about bloggers over at AOL and basically what they're required to do and how many articles they're supposed to write and the guidelines. And I guess from my perspective here is if you are a blogger and you're hiring anyone to do articles for you, this is not what you want to strive to do. You know, I've got a number of folks at Geek News Central that write for us. We don't set minimums. We don't set limits. I actually have an upper limit on how many total they can post a month. If they're going to go over that, they need to let me know, so I don't blow my budget out. It's on a pay per topic view. I get to, you know, I pay a decent wage. I feel I do anyway, considered to some other sites. I pay a bonus on specific type of articles, which pays about three times as much as what a normal article would for what I would call feature articles. But looking at the AOL model, they just were purely nothing more than a machine for a writer to put out 10 to 11 articles every 8 hours. And, you know, I hate to say this, it doesn't sound like a lot, 10 or 11 articles for an 8 hour period, because, you know, you can write up a pretty good blog post in about 20 minutes, but that's really a lot. That is a lot of content to put out. And then these guys were having panic attacks. Hey, Norbert, I saw your son snuck in there real quick.
Yeah, he just got up. Nice thing about being a kid on summer vacation.
Yeah, well, I'm a I kind of go old school. My dad was a type that I'd let him get away with it. He'd let me get away with a little bit more on the weekends, but on weekdays he would be like, "Get your old Coley out of bed and move. I got chores for you to do." But I don't have too many chores here. We live, you know, in suburbia, so it's not like I can send him out and do any farm work.
Exactly. Same here. You know, no wood to chop or anything like that. Just maybe a lawn to mow every now and then.
They complain about that. But what do you guys think about these, ale content slaves? These guys that are just, you know, the thing I look at this is they chose to do this. They're making about $35,000 a year, which is not a lot. But I guess in some parts of the country, that's probably a living.
Well, from my perspective, what they're writing, I mean, like you say, yeah, you can knock out a post in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever, but what's the quality of that post?
Right.
How deeply can you research a topic and how well can you know a topic and really convey something worth reading in that period of time? And I think what you end up with is a lot of fluff. You know, there's a lot of sites that will remain nameless that are constantly publishing just basically junk. And when you go to search on the internet, you find all these sites that have useless information, lots of verbiage, no content, and it pollutes the real value of the internet. So I think it's cross purpose to getting good, solid information out there, you know, as well as being hard on the writer.
this is the crazy part. They were giving, basically, you get an email with a link to a video clip, and it might be about Law and Order, Family Guy, Dancing with the Stars. It would be a 2 to 3 minute clip of something about that show. And then they were immediately told to write about the show. And so originally they were given about 35 minutes to put the article together, but then it was reduced down to about 20 minutes, including time to format for the article, graphics, and so forth. But they basically said, hey, I was essentially lying and putting together puff pieces, but it was all in this battle for, you know, the Google, getting Google traffic.
Well, that's the problem. You basically, they've got an article puppy mill type thing going on.
Right.
Where, you know, not a puppy mill, sorry. It'd be more like, you know, slave labor basically going out and just grinding these people into the dirt to come up with something. So like Dr. Bill said, you know, how much knowledge can you put into that? How much real information are you getting in this article? How much can they put, you know, time do they really get to give a quality piece? I'd rather have a good quality piece rather than a bit of fluff.
Yep. And they were getting paid on basically volume. And, you know, and it's you look at the volume that they had to do on each article to really earn money, and it's significant. It really was. Well, guys, that's it for today. Normally I'd go a little longer, but I have to leave the house here in an hour, and, we've got an early morning start. I got to get everybody in, but I want to thank you guys both for coming out, hanging out with me today. Of course, Dr. Bill, again, where can they find you?
I'm at drbill.cc for computer curmudgeon, and also drbill.tv. You can also follow me on Twitter at @drbillbailey, Dr. Bill Bailey.
And Norbert, where can they find you at?
You can find me over at totallycooltech.com, and you can check me out on Twitter or Facebook. Just look for TCT Podcast. And I'm looking to get more Twitter followers, as a matter of fact. I've been having some fun out there, especially lately.
So TCT Podcast is your Twitter name?
Correct.
Very, very cool. So, of course, you can follow me at Geek News. Of course, those of you that are watching or listening to this live, don't forget we've got a number of great shows here. We've got our twice-weekly Geek News Central podcast that is hosted by me. We have got The Gadget Professor, which comes out every Thursday, hosted by Don Bain. We've got Robot Underpants, our news and information coming out of San Francisco and Silicon Valley by Langley. And, of course, this show, Saturday Morning Tech. So I want to thank all of you for watching and listening. If you've got comments about today's show, you can send me an email at geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, our voicemail hotline remains available 24/7 at 619-342-7365. And I want to give both of my guests a thank you for being here early this morning and hanging out. And for the rest of you that are following, I will be in Washington, D.C. for the next two shows of Geek News Central, be on the road. And then there will be no Saturday Morning Tech next week because I will be airborne coming home, but then we'll be back on a regular schedule. Guys, any final parting thoughts?
Just happy Father's Day to everybody tomorrow. So.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I got that going on that, here. So.
Congrats on your degree. That's really exciting news. I know you're happy to get that. And by the way, on the Gadget Professor, I really enjoyed the last one I saw on the Roku. I'm a huge Roku fan, and he had some good info on that. So a lot of good stuff out there on Tech Podcasts.
Absolutely.
And on Geek News Central.
Yeah, check out the 130-some shows over at techpodcast.com, all family-safe content. And got a great group of guys and gals over there. But everyone else, thank you so much for hanging out today with us. I'll have the stream up for a few more minutes, but this is the end of the formal recording. We'll see you next time. Aloha.